is 4:45 on Downtown. Time for Message in the Bottle. Brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan right here in studio with us doing what we do on Tuesday afternoons. Hello.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I apologize in advance for my slightly scratchy but improving voice. My son made me sick last week, and then my band did a two-night stand at the Poorhouse, which culminated in Mike, who I absolutely adore, and thank you for booking us, Mike, but requesting a Pearl Jam song, which ends in me just yelling my guts out.
So you vettered your larynx into submission.
I vettered my... It's well said. It did. Actually, I think about Eddie Vedder a lot when I'm singing, and all these guys, because I think that one of the easiest ways to actually get through some of these songs is to not enunciate. And that man made a career.
Yeah.
You know, it was fabulous. It was like, what did he say? Doesn't matter. Just sounded good.
That's right. It's all about the feel.
But it was good. And yeah, my wife, our anniversary was Sunday. And so she came out on Saturday, and I got to dedicate a couple tunes to her. And while I still had a voice, which was nice, because on Sunday morning, I most assuredly did not. So it was kind of like, here's your card. But it's cool. So.
Well, happy belated anniversary
Thank
as well.
You. And happy anniversary, Christine, belated as well. Although I did remember on the day. I even had a card in advance.
Wow.
Which is good for me, because I'm Facebook, I got to say, Mark Zuckerberg, the smartest thing he ever did was, but it's so-and-so's birthday.
Yeah.
And you're like, yes, it is. That's correct. Especially when it's like your mom. You're laughing like that's not a thing. That's so a thing. My mom, I mean, it's a good thing she loves me, because she must... despise the fact I don't remember dates. I mean, I remember
good.
A lot of things, but dates.
No, we got married. It's great. Everything's on a 7 or a 3. We got married on the 7th. Our son was born 7th of August. We got married. He was born on the 7th of January. Not just those few months later. It was years later.
And I'm not here to judge.
And then my wife's birthday is on the 3rd of December. So every 3rd and 7th, I had to stop and go, is this
is
one of those?
Something? Yeah. That's even more scary,
and
frankly.
And my birthday's on the
Every
3rd.
Time you land on a 7, you're like, I'm forgetting a thing.
What is it?
Hey, honey, I love you today. More than usual? I don't know.
What month is it? Oh, never mind.
Never mind. I don't love you any more than usual today. Cool. So anyway, getting back to Vino, which leads to children being born and other things like that. We're continuing in our North American tour, California tour this month, talking about the origins of American viticulture and California viticulture and things like that. And we're actually ending up drinking the exact same wine, although it's the new vintage that I brought last year for this, because frankly, I love it and it fits in so well with what we're talking about here today. So California, right? So viticulture in America didn't start in California because the early settlers in America didn't think to bring grapes with them. It took a long, long time for grapes that people like to drink to actually end up here. There were some North American grape species, but they weren't the kind of grapes that you like to drink. And we've talked on this program a lot about phylloxera and what is done to many vineyards all over the world. Well, phylloxera was a basically North American East Coast problem before anybody knew about it. And it was initially failed attempts on the part of our founding fathers to plant the grapes that they liked to drink. You know, they brought over, you know, Merlot and Cab and all these other things from the Bordeaux region and other French and Italian varietals, and they all died. They planted them in the East Coast in places like Virginia, the Mid-Atlantic states, and they all died, and they didn't know why, because they didn't have the technology to detect this little bug that ate the roots. Well, California didn't have that problem. And so when you had Spanish settlers heading out there, and they brought their own grapes too, because everybody, I mean, you know, essentially you're going on this voyage. You really have no idea where it's going to, but you know when you get there, you're going to want to drink. And so a lot of these people, they did. They traveled with things that they knew that when they got there, they could start their own agriculture and viticulture. So the first attempts in California were actually in Baja, right? So still part of Mexico, that long sort of finger-like appendage that goes south from California. That was the first attempts in the 16th century. The first vineyard in what we recognize as part of the continental U.S. right now, was in 1769 at the San Diego Mission, founded by the Franciscans, specifically a guy named Junipero Serra, S-E-R-R-A. And so phylloxera wasn't there. The vinifera took hold, and new varieties started to get brought over by immigrants. New waves of immigrants, of course, even up, you know, through the gold rush and things like that. So you had a lot of plantings of the Croatian grape that we all know as Zinfandel now, Mataro, which is also known in France as Mourvèdre, and in Spain as Monastrell. So fairly thick-skinned, hardy reds are really what took, because, of course, it's hot in a lot of these places. And thin-skinned grapes really don't like that. Pinot Noir, things like that, they really do not dig the heat. They dig the cool. So the first plantings that were really successful were these really thick-skinned ones. Also, of course, the famed Mission grape, which you are still seeing being made into tasty wines down in South America in places like Chile. In fact, we have one, I believe we opened it on the air a couple months ago, but we have one in the store right now made from what they call Pais, which is the Mission grape. So check that out if you have an opportunity, because it's really sort of a throwback to what they were drinking a long time ago. Now, what happened to California? Because as we mentioned last week, as we were running out of time, of course, what made California famous on the wine scene was the tasting in Paris in 1976. So if I'm telling you that they started planting grapes back in the 1700s, where's the California wine scene? Well, a bunch of things happened, of course. Prohibition was not so good for the American liquor industry in certain ways, and very good for it in other ways. But if you were an officially sanctioned winery, it didn't do you any favors. And the only ways that a lot of those sanctioned wineries, like Franciscan, for instance, made it was that they made sacramental wine, and they basically classified it as something for use in religion, and religion getting the status that it does in this country. They're like, oh, okay, well, that sounds cool to me. And then, of course, a lot of other places just ripped up the vines, and they all went to heck. Another thing that happened was the Dust Bowl. The Dust Bowl was very, very bad in the parts of Middle America, and so that sent a lot of people to California hoping to make their way, and so they ripped up a lot of vines because, again, it wasn't profitable, and so they planted other stuff. And then, of course, the World Wars were also very, very bad because they took a lot of the available help and sent it off to die. And so anywhere where war has struck, very, very famously, the agriculture has suffered afterwards, after the war's over, because there's not a lot of able-bodied people in the fields available. And it will be interesting, not to get all political, but to see what is going to happen if increasingly there are more reforms to get available pickers out of places like California and Oregon and all those other places, to see if the price of things like wine goes up, because if you leave grapes to shrivel on the vine, they will do exactly that. But California came back in a huge way, obviously. And it's so remarkable. I mean, as we mentioned last week, it takes up so much of the West Coast. There is so much good land for growing wine that even though it was really sort of off the face of the planet in terms of wine for so long, the recovery has been remarkable. In fact, I was just in the supermarket down the street and ran into an old industry vet, a guy named Doug Snell. And if anybody is in the industry, you know Doug in Maine. He used to be out in California, and he was marveling. He hurt his shoulder this summer, and so he was reading about the rise and fall of the Mondavi family and realizing that he knew all these people and that he's not a super old guy in his 60s, and he was really there for sort of the reemergence of the California wine scene. It hasn't been that long, but you wouldn't know it to look at it right now, because it's, again, it's over 80% of the U.S. wine production. It's super famous. Tons of land planted to vine. So before we run out of time, I did want to hit the wine that we're drinking today.
Which is wonderful.
Which is wonderful. Even though biodynamically, it is a root day. This is not a good wine day, but it's showing very nicely. This is Wild Thing Zinfandel, Old Vine Zin.
It makes my heart sing.
It makes your heart sing. How appropriate. Move over, Rova. And let Carol Shelton take over. So Carol Shelton was one of the first very important female winemakers in the American wine scene, and continues to be. Zinfandel is her thang, and it's tremendously good wine. So check it out. It's got a little opulence, got some weight to it. I personally, tonight I'm making ribs. So that's sort of right there in the wheelhouse for that. So check it out. Wild Things Infidels, like $25. So good. And again, before we run out of time, I'll mention a couple of things. This Thursday, there is a surprise pop-up Italian wine tasting, Portovino. These guys go out and find super off-the-map stuff. So if you're into esoteric wines, natural wines, Italian wines, just drinking wines, or meeting people that go out and source this stuff, Thursday, 5 to 7 p.m. at Bangor Wine and Cheese. Then, of course, on the 21st of this month, again from 5 to 7, we'll have a California wine tasting, likely to taste the Zinfandel that we're drinking today. And then on the 29th of this month, from 5 to 7, we'll have the massive wine kittens, leggings, veterans. It's just going to be quite the boisterous affair. But remember, that is a benefit for the Bubba's Angels charity, which helps connect vets and seniors at no cost with adoptable animals so that they have a companion, which is really awesome. And I'm just afraid that my family will walk away with a kitten as well. And I haven't talked to anybody involved in this that's not afraid of the same thing. But hey, kittens. Right. So what are you going to do? Cool. So it's been charming. Well, next week we're going to talk about the other California, New World, Old World, Rhone Rangers, things like that. Bringing the Old World to the New World. So it should be a lot of fun. And then we'll talk on the 26th about, as I like to call it, God help us, Chardonnay. Which you really can't avoid if you're talking about California. So we shan't. We'll charge headlong into that. But I look forward to seeing all of you, hopefully, this Thursday from 5 to 7 for that Italian tasting. Cheers.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Thank you, Eric.